Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. We're talking NXT for October the 17th, 2023. Got lots and lots of computer problems going on. So if you lose me, I'm sorry, but I'm here for now. I'm Kelly Wells. I'm your host, and you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games. And we have a full house. And an empty switchboard. So you can call us.
That's 515. That's not true. We have one person listening right now that wants to talk to us. A good regular.
My
switchboard's not empty.
My switchboards having issues. So I guess we're going to have to put people
just
on.
You're kind of just on theme, having computer problems tonight.
What?
We have one person
here.
We have one person who wants to talk to us. We got a couple other people listening. Come on, Kelly.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what's going on with my computer, but the problems are myriad, folks. There are many of them. And thank you, people that I did not know that were there, for calling us. That's 515-605-9345. Or you can email us at, what is it?
PWTorchNXT@gmail.com.
I almost gave my home email address. Which would not have been right. Oh, kitten, you cannot walk on my computer, especially today. Might explode. Might be a real problem. Okay, so our main event, I mean, let's be serious. Our main event is Jade Cargill. She showed up at the very, very end. We had to find a reason to show that. So, I mean, it's not an accident that it happened during the Lyra Valkyria setting up her match with Becky Lynch segment. We had Lyra backstage after the main event where Carmelo Hayes won, beat Baron Corbin and Dijak through nefarious means, some would say, a kind of a heelish act to poach somebody else's victory as Corbin hits the end of days. Dijak gets to take one person's finisher and job to another person because Dijak's job is to job. And so he takes the loss as Carmelo goes on to we're going to get Hayes Dragunov 3, of which I am not sad. But the big story there, of course, is Hayes Williams and what's going to be next there. We will be talking about whether or not that was Williams who attacked Hayes or if somebody else did that to disturb the crap. And either way is great, and either way is going to end up with a Trick Mellow gang match. So we're excited about that. But you got Carmelo Hayes, your new number one contender, and then backstage Lyra Valkyria watching that, rips up a photo of her and Becky Lynch and walks away, only for Jade Cargill to show up and tap her wrist like the time is imminent. So that is our main event. Let's talk main event before we go to our caller, and then we will head over that way. Nate Lindberg, who are you, and how did you find our main event segment?
Oh, I'm at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. And you know what? I told myself I wasn't going to do that. That was just kind of like a reflex there, but whatever. At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. It wasn't a bad triple. I was expecting you to throw to Bruce. I'm not going to lie. So I didn't have any of my stuff prepared. You never throw to me first, but that's okay.
Is that true?
Ever since I've been on the show, I think this is like one of the first times you've thrown to me first.
You
even
know,
with Tom,
always be prepared.
Even with Tom.
You always threw to Tom first because we'd been together forever.
And then it kind of just continued on with Bruce.
Yeah, well, he was always there too,
right
at the show.
So,
well, yeah, but, that's true.
So it's a pleasure to be called on first. I was just woefully unprepared, but no, you know, I'm glad to see we're going to see, the third incarnation of this match here. Carmelo Hayes, Dragunov, a lot of D's. They've got some excellent chemistry together. Dragunov, I love him as champion right now because he doesn't feel like he should be champion. He never felt like he should be champion. He was always that underdog. And man, right now he feels like he's on fire. He's on top of the world. I really like the presentation that he is giving us. And well, I guess when I say he's giving us, you know, his mannerisms and, you know, his promo style and just his energy and aura, I guess, right now is the best way I can describe it. And obviously Carmelo Hayes is one of the best in all of WWE as far as I'm concerned right now. So it's going to be a great match, you know, come, I think, what, second night of Halloween Havoc, I believe they said. But the match here itself, it was okay. I'm, you know, your kind of standard WWE triple threat match. There was some cool spots in it and whatnot, but you know, the match itself for me was just kind of there. But yeah, I'm looking forward to what we're going to see at Halloween Havoc.
Bruce, I'm very sorry I did not throw to you first. I can't believe I would do such a thing. But thanks to that preamble that we had to go through, I won't make a mistake like that again.
yep.
I had no idea. I literally
I'm sure you don't do it on purpose, but it's like I'm sure you've probably thrown to me first once or twice, but generally, yeah, you always throw to me second. So I, as I told Kelly and Bruce earlier in the night, I have a very fortunate opportunity to make a presentation in front of my company tomorrow in front of like 1,000 people, just about 1,000 people. I was told that I had that opportunity at like 4 o'clock this afternoon, 3:30, something like that. So I've been scrambling all day. So as you guys are doing your thing, I was just kind of like poking away at my presentation a little bit. And I was like, oh yeah, now I got to talk wrestling. It's my turn. Oh, that's all right. So had to switch some tabs and stuff,
I'm okay still at rotating who's first on each topic, right? I'm going to you first on the second topic. And that's how it's supposed to go.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you knew that, then why don't you know this guy? Bruce, your turn.
Yeah. So you can find – I'm Bruce A. Hazelwood. You can find me at @_Lee253. If we're going to talk about our jobs, I started a new gig on August 16th. Yesterday was October 16th. And after multiple people recommended that I apply for a promotion, I received it yesterday. So I actually have Saturdays off now, so I'll be able to do both the weekly show and any of the weekend PLEs or any of the Saturday PLEs for NXT. So we're back to kind of having the full crew for the rotations again, and it's really nice. So I'm not focusing on my job right now as main is because I have the day off. But to this, I'll go back earlier in the show when they announced that Trick Williams was added as the fourth member, and who was the person that made the announcement? That's what I can't remember right now.
Was it Quinn McKay? Kelly Kincaid?
Was it Kelly Kincaid? I remember her announcing that. I remember someone saying, "And it's this man," and I can't remember who it was. But
to make the that there was going to be a fourth. That was yes. Ilya himself.
Oh right, so he made that announcement, and then I thought the reaction from Carmelo was really good, just his shock. And then, you know, they had the interactions later, and they cleared the ring of the heels, and they teased Melo maybe taking off his coat behind Williams' back, but then they moved on and had their segment in the locker room and everything. And then we had Trick Williams get laid out in the back, but we didn't see who did it. Hayes ran up and asked what happened. They didn't know. I'm just thinking they have cameras everywhere, just not in the spots where they need to have the attacks happen or, you know, so.
Well, that's part of the thing, man. You've got to study where the cameras are in the building, right? It's part of the strategy. It's part of the tactics of the heels, right?
Yes. So they left it open that Hayes could have been the one to attack him, leave, and then come back. I think it's more likely that it's someone that is connected to them, but not in the media. It could even be Dragunov, but I'm not sure if it was any of the three people that were in this main event match. I should also say, when Williams was added to the match, I thought that Corbin was going to win. Once Williams was officially declared out of the match, I thought Hayes was going to win. So the reason I thought Hayes was going to win without Williams in the match is because he has yet had a rematch for that, the championship that he held for a while, and a trilogy match with Dragunov will do good business, and as Kelly said, we're not mad about it. Their first two matches, as we discussed, I guess he did have the rematch. I can't remember now. But we had the second match. Nate and I discussed that it was a very different type of match compared to their first one. Maybe this was a breaker match I'm thinking of, yeah. But either way, it's going to be a great match. And I think that's going to be the headliner for night two, correct? With Lynch and Valkyria being night one of Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The match itself, pretty much standard triple threat stuff you're going to see in WWE. A little bit of a slight mishap on the Feast Your Eyes into the End of Days at the end there, but it worked out. And all those, as Kelly brought up, people might say it's a little bit of a heelish move for Hayes to get the win like that, but in a triple threat match, you're also just taking advantage of your opportunities, and you found one, you took it. And I think here you could have gone with Corbin, but that, I think, was it's a story that could only tell if Trick was also in the match.
So, yeah, I'm psyched about this, psyched to see where all these moving parts lead. It's just interesting that Mello's in all these matches that are big matches, but they're not just about him. They're everything he does is colored by how his relationship with Trick is moving on. And they have their scene. We're still Trick Mello gang. And it's like, they're acting it so well because they're saying all the right things to each other, saying all the same things to each other, but it's kind of like the scene with Avon Barksdale and Stringer Bell when they're talking about on the balcony where they're saying all the right stuff to each other, but they know in their heads they're about to start trying to kill each other.
Shout out to Phil Lindsay going through his first run through of the wire and just got to the part where Omar got popped.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, so he's almost done.
He's getting there, yeah.
Last season. Okay, so... yeah, that's okay. Now my brain's in a wire rabbit hole. Probably shouldn't have done that to myself. Where's the boy string? Where's Wallet? Oh man. Oh man. Oh man. Okay.
Got going off the rails tonight.
Yep. And,
already. Bodie's so dirty. Oh man. Okay. Sorry.
Bodie's my guy. I love him.
I know.
Okay. Let's hold on, but let's put a pin in that and talk about it later when we're not doing this, perhaps.
Yeah, is this like for 8YB or something where you talk about cinema and things we watch on?
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, The Wire
TV
is very, very much cinema, you know, in television form.
Right.
Yeah, well, so that's what I mean, you know.
I just don't know if Tom has seen it. I want to say that he has not. So I can
talk
about it.
You got to call me in as a pinch hitter or something.
There you go. Yeah, we do it when it's like 3 in the morning over there. That work for you?
All right. Why don't you guys need to just start a level up show? There we go. And then you just finish up the level up show with Tywin talking about The Wire.
There you go.
Nate's politely trying to move us on.
There. Well, Nate's got to move us on the switchboard too, because I'm looking right at the switchboard and we're called in and I'm seeing all my information and nothing's there. I see no callers,
well,
including us.
We
so,
have two. We have Nate, two. And of course, it's the two numbers that always screw me up because one's 814 and one's 914, and I can never remember which is which. But 814 has been in the queue the longest, so we're going to go to 814. I believe this is either Sean or Brad.
Brad.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, 914. You know what? That was hilarious, but I'll take it. I guess 914 is Brad. Or Sean. Brad. It's Brad. I'm pretty sure it's Brad. Anyway, let's just, go ahead.
My first question is, this Alexis King debuting at Halloween Havoc, he would be a good first feud for him if you were booking NXT.
Dante Chen.
Always a good answer. I actually really liked that segment tonight a lot.
Yeah.
You can't do this guy without acknowledging Brian Pillman, and you wouldn't want to, because Brian Pillman, though he was never like a world champion or anything, was a really, really important piece of the Monday Night Wars. He just put his heart and soul into everything he did. And after his body gave out, he still did it as long as people would pay him to do it. He was just a fascinating figure. Somebody you kind of had to be there for, and many of you were, but, I thought they did a good job of having his kid acknowledge him and still like want to distance himself from him in a way that I think would have made his dad proud, to use whatever it was to whatever means were at his feet to get over. And you also can't avoid it just because he looks so damn much like his dad. People were going to notice that true. even in the kayfabe era where people wouldn't have known, they would have said, he looks an awful lot like Brian Bryman, 25 years ago. So I'm not writing out the idea that Lexus King could be the one that attacked Trick Williams. He's maybe a long shot, but I wonder if they're going to try, because they do like the move of taking somebody, bringing them in, and if they have any name value at all already, throwing them into the main event scene. And even if they're not going to stay there, see what happens, see what sticks. I rather like that idea, but if they don't want to do that, I wouldn't be surprised if Dante Chen was his first TV opponent. It won't be his first TV feud, but it might be his first TV opponent. But I kind of also like the idea of him bullying likable characters like Andre Chase, like Duke Hudson.
What's not to like about Dante Chen?
Yes, I know.
Everything is likable about Dante Chen. Well, we want more for Dante Chen than just being a debut fodder for someone else.
Right.
Okay.
So that would work also. Until I'm proven otherwise, I'm going to say they're going big with Lexus King. And they're going to make him the one who actually was the attacker. So he's disturbing crap between Trick and Mello, but also trying to make his own name, which is what his whole character is about. So, if he wants to make a name, he does something big out of the gate, and that would be this, Bruce.
Sorry, the Kraken just scored the first goal of the game against the Avalanche right now. Happened to see the shot.
What does that have to do with the wire?
It's cold in Maryland. So I do like your idea of Lexus King being the one to attack Trick Williams and go from there. If it's not Williams, I like the idea of him and Wes Lee, because one, Lee's been off for a bit, and then he could come back and go on another journey. But two, Lee, you've talked about it before, his style matches so well with everybody. He makes everyone look really good in the ring. Because Pillman Jr., or I guess Lexus King, hasn't been regarded as the best in-ring worker, I think having a feud with someone like Lee, especially when they can work together every day in the Performance Center during their feud, I feel like that could be a really good way for him to quickly develop, and then you do establish him. Wesley's been in that main event scene. He's on the precipice of being a perpetual main eventer. So you put him there, he's right on the cusp. You don't necessarily have to give him the pressure and responsibility of someone like a Trick Williams or being in that Carmelo Hayes situation or even a Corbin or a Dijak because of where they're being booked right now. I think Wesley is a good one if it's not Trick Williams. Going back to that promo, what I really liked about this is it kind of was breaking the fourth wall a bit too, because everything that those wrestlers we saw in the documentaries, all the comments they said about Brian Pillman, all the glowing remarks they had, those are the things that we as fans who were there say about him. And as he said, he lost his dad at 4 years old, so we have more memories of his dad. We have all those positive memories of his dad that he never had, which I think plays even more into the character that he's portraying here. And as you said, you have to acknowledge it because of everything involved, but definitely distancing himself from all of that because I think these are very legitimate ways a heel can make, you know, it makes sense to them and it makes sense to us because of how it's being laid out. I wouldn't be surprised if in the future he does adopt more of his father's persona and wrestling mannerisms and sort of even more of the attire and things. But for now, I really like the portrayal that they have with him. I'm just really interested to see how much improvement he's had in the ring from what I've seen before.
Nate?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how this all plays out myself. Like, he's obviously he's got a great character on the indies and all of that. And I'll be honest, I've seen a handful of his matches. I can't remember like his work rate or anything like that. So I'll leave it there. But, you know, him coming in with this character, having this conviction that he always wanted to get away from wrestling, but wrestling was just calling to him. But, you know, he tried everything and all these different sports. I think that was last week's promo. We talked about that. But it always led back to wrestling. And now he wants to shed, you know, the shadow of his father and all of that. It's a very compelling story. And I'm glad they're at least telling this and kind of giving us a reason why he's changing his name, and he doesn't just come out with the name Bron Breakker one day, and they kind of just acknowledge his family in passing here and there, and then, you know, maybe bring his father or uncle or something on, or no, I think it was his dad. I don't think Scott's made it on NXT yet. But regardless, you know, I'm kind of glad they're giving us at least a little bit more of a backstory there, because of who his dad is. And because, you know, he does look so much like his father, but you know, he's made such a name for himself on the indies and everything. If he comes into NXT, all of a sudden he's just, you know, he's got a completely different – I forget, what the heck's the first name again? I'm sorry.
Lexus,
thank you. Lexus King. He comes in, I'm Lexus King. Everybody's looking at him like, no, you're not. You're Brian Pillman. Come on. Brian Pillman Jr. And nobody's going to take that seriously. But – they're giving us a good backstory, telling us why he's changing his name. We all still know him, and I don't even think they ever once said the name Brian Pillman in any of these. I could be wrong.
His name came through on the TV when they're going through his
today. Yeah, like Regal and okay. Guys said it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Commentary during the video, yeah.
All right. But did they ever say Brian Pillman Jr.? I don't think – probably not.
No.
I don't know.
No.
But yeah, so even so, you know, like they're kind of, you know, they're not shying away from Brian Pillman. We all know who he is, but because they're giving us this backstory, we can kind of go on this journey with him that, you know, he has adopted this new persona within NXT, you know, it's not like when Kenta showed up in NXT and his name change was just Kenta to Hideo Itami on the big screen, you know.
Like, yeah, he gave a promo.
He did. He said, this is why this is happening. Mm-hmm.
But it was still very lackluster, underwhelming.
Better than Asuka's, which was right after. And it was Kana, and then it said Asuka, and there was no explanation.
I actually forgot about that. I completely forgot about that one. Yeah.
Comparatively, Itami's is much better than Asuka's. Compared to this, it's definitely below par.
Yep.
Or I guess above par. I don't know.
But yeah, so that's where I am on Pillman. I'm really looking forward to see where. Oh, and sorry, in terms of where he's going to fall in on the card, I think it really depends on what they're going to do with him, kind of off the bat. I think they could. So obviously I think they could put, you know, as Kelly said, throw him right into the main event and kind of be fine. But there's also kind of part of me that also would like for him to come in and maybe have a few squash matches before, like, so we could see who he is and kind of get a little feel for him in the ring first. But depending on this character, that might not be the best way to introduce him. And the best way to introduce him might just be do something chaotic, like attack Trick Williams, again, as Kelly said, and, you know, kind of jump into the fold that way, jump right into the main event scene, and then boom, you've got somebody with, you know, main event caliber status who also has a family legacy in the business and that story, you know. So, yeah, I think I'm all on board with this. I'm really curious and excited to see where this winds up.
So you're saying do a Blair Davenport, basically.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Actually, yeah.
All right. Ryan, where are you going to take us next?
I have a question on the opening match with Chase U being the number one contenders. What are the odds that the cheerleaders are going to be the ones that cost them the title shot at Halloween Havoc?
I would say hi. Yeah, there's. I thought you were going to ask about the odds of a title change, which are zero. I think Chase U would lose something by winning too much. They gotta, if they're Santino only got to be Santino for so long because his wins were few and far between and therefore worth celebrating. That's kind of where I've compared their act to Santino for a while. Yeah, and they even had Vic put over JC and what she was doing for Chase U in this week. They didn't make that big of a deal of the fact that they were there, which is a really good way to make it seem like a bigger deal when they're presented as background. They're like, we're not supposed to be thinking about them at all. And they're going to step away from Chase U in the biggest way. I still don't think that I would have Thea step away from them. So maybe it's just JC, but that might just be wishful thinking. I really, really, I don't know. Maybe they think Thea's got too much potential to just be Chase U. And maybe she does. I just love the way she does Chase U. I really, really like it. As for the chances it's them, I would say pretty strong. It would work better if they were facing heels, but this match is face-face, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, it would work better if they're facing heels. I really don't think Chase U has much of a chance of winning. Well, I don't know. I keep going back and forth because it's Gallus and it's Chase U. And so it's like you would expect Gallus to just trance over them, but they're also telling a story with Chase U right now.
I mean, it's not Gallus.
Yeah, it's not Gallus at all. They were in this battle royal.
They were in the battle royal.
Oh, my God. Wow.
It's Tony D and Sax.
Jeez.
They don't
Nate.
Wrestle very much, so
wow.
I can give you a break.
I have literally been working nonstop since 7 o'clock this morning. So, yeah, Jesus. Wow. Okay, so let me try that again. Tony D and Sax. They're on Tony D and Sax have been on a great run so far. They've had or at least their story anyway, has been very compelling for me. So I don't really think it's time for them to lose the titles just yet. It hasn't been quite long enough for them to actually hold the titles and be kind of a meaningful run for the very lengthy story that they told, D'Angelo going to jail and all of that, you know, kind of everything coming full circle now to them being tag team champions. But
that's
at the same time,
they've only defended the title like once since they won.
It is actually once they've had. Yeah, all they had to do to stop getting booked was to win the championship.
Yeah, you know, because like that 30-day clause apparently doesn't exist anymore in WWE. Roman, I'm talking to you.
It never did. It never did. That was broken all the time. We were talking about that online in the 90s.
Oh, God, no, I know. I know. It was like, it was, I just like to bring it up from time to time because it's like just wrestling logic. But I forget what the heck I was, where my train of thought was here. But, but at the same time, Chase University, they've kind of been on this story right now where they're losing kind of, I guess there's a little bit of chaos is within Chase University, you know, stemming
like
from Thea Hale. Just like the show tonight. Stemming from Thea Hale, JC Jane, that's right. That's what I meant. Thea Hale, JC Jane. So, it could also be a story that they're telling with Chase University to kind of, like, bring them up and maybe compel Thea Hale to, like, you know, hey, see, look, we're actually champions, but she's still, you know, I don't know. There's certainly, you know, that direction, that avenue they could go with Chase University. But right now, I think Gallus is going to retain the tag team title.
Bruce, on whether Chase U has a chance to unseat the Ascension as champion.
Man, this show feels like a NXT 2.0 production right now. So Chase U is definitely not going to win. Stax and D'Angelo are going to retain and only their second defense since they won the title. I was hoping that we would see a bit more storytelling with the teams involved, and we really only saw that between Brawling Brutes and OTM. And I felt like there was, I guess you could also go with the Creeds are they still calling them? What are they just going by? Garza
wow. and Curio. Yeah.
Yes,
I haven't heard Les Lotharios.
So I'm guessing you're gonna have some feuds there. But I felt like with the teams, like could have done a bit more. But what's up?
You know, it's funny. I have a whole bunch of different friend circles and stuff, right? And there's a pulling a Nate in every single one of them. It's funny. I love it.
I don't know if that's a good or bad thing for you, but
I think it's hilarious.
Okay, well,
because it all means something different.
Looking at Kelly's remarks on the match, it was just again without as much storytelling, and the storytelling with these teams really only happened at right when they're eliminated or right at the very end of the match. It wasn't sort of told throughout the match, and so. For me, it was kind of just a battle royal that was there. I guess as an opener, it worked because it was just so chaotic. But, this is the winners are someone who have zero chance to actually win the titles next week, which means I don't really have an investment in the match.
Yeah, they really made hay with this one. The first two teams gone in 30 seconds. 5 minutes, 27 seconds was all it took to get rid of 16 of these 20 guys.
Kemp was gone within the first 5 seconds.
Yeah, and maybe you're doing something with Kemp, but gosh, it seems like whatever fanfare he was brought in with is gone. But it's less gone than Gable Stevenson's. so the brothers, maybe not their time. It was – I liked the twist of having this transition to a tag team match because it feels like the winners did a tag team thing to actually get a tag team championship match and didn't just, throw somebody over the top rope, which everyone does to everyone in every match. Ryan,
yeah.
What else have you got?
Got a question on, I know Cody Rhodes talked about this last week about there being a breakout tournament for the men. Do you know anyone that would be a good candidate that would be in the running to win that tournament?
I wish that I knew these names. My following of Level Up was always just listening to Tom do the Level Up show, and now he's not doing that, so I don't know these names at all, unfortunately. I feel like once they put them on TV, I'll have some clue, and it'll probably be guys that we've seen play security many, many times or stuff like that. But I don't have those names ready.
Yeah.
And I wish I had Tom here right now. Does either one of you have a name that you can give me?
Outside of Dante Chen, I think if we're just going off people we kind of know and have seen, I'm going to say Obafemi is going to lock to be in that tournament.
That's a good one, actually.
Yeah, and hopefully someone that they push really hard during that tournament because he has a lot of potential from what we saw of him in this short time. Aside from that, I'm looking at the Performance Center training names, and I can't really pull out anybody that, to me, I haven't really heard anything about. Or even, cause again, I listened to Bonus Point. That's how I got my stuff up at Level Up and the trainees. I just don't have enough time in my life, especially with my new job, to watch anything besides really NXT and listen to the podcast aside from that. So I'm going to say Obafemi right now is going to be my lock to win the breakout tournament, as we have no participants announced. So if you're a betting man or a betting woman, or a betting person, go make your bets right now on Obafemi. Put it down.
Or Dante Chen.
I'm going to say my pick is Obafemi, and I'm going to add that I thought that right before Bruce said it.
Sure, yes. Oh, of course.
I would not have thought of him again. You reminded me of him. And
I completely forgot.
But I'll co-sign for now. I got no other names to throw at you. The tournament's one guy. I know who's winning. Ryan, if you got one more, go ahead.
do you think Jade is most likely a candidate to beat Becky for the title since they gave that clue tonight?
I thought that Lyra was the most likely to beat Becky, and now I think maybe it's Jade. I think they've told a pretty interesting story with Becky and Lyra being from the same places where they are. I really liked the touch of Lyra saying that she really wanted to be, she was working towards being the first Irish-born NXT Women's Championship champion, and her idol took that away from her. So, you know, framing her in a negative light, even though she was somebody that she obviously looked up to very, very much. Becky bringing in some of their past history, like knowing some of the same people and everything like that. I really like it. It was no frills here tonight, Lyra versus Becky, but it did really make me want to see the match. And then they threw that wrinkle at us right at the end. It's tough because everything in me is telling me Becky probably wanted to do this to really, really, really give a boost to this Irish talent, Lyra Valkyria, who is very, very good. But Jade is just such a star, like such a ready-made star, and can anchor that. I mean, we saw her anchor a division while having fairly limited knowledge of like how to do a whole lot in the ring. And I think she's much better off where she is because she just wasn't getting the reps that she needed over there. In addition to not getting a lot of matches and there are no house shows, she didn't get a lot of minutes because the women just didn't. And so there's that.
Still
and,
don't.
And yeah. They that has not changed ever over there. So I think that she, for her development, whether she ends up going back to AEW someday or whether she stays here now, where I think she will. I don't think WWE will let her go overly willingly at any point. I think that she could be a big deal. I mean, the fact that we figured out they were going to let her keep her name, pretty clear signal that they thought her name had the kind of cachet that that would allow that to happen. Now, she could still lose it as she goes up to the main roster, but we did get the story today that Triple H is entirely back in control of creative today, yesterday, whatever it was. So I would bet against that because he hasn't been quick to change names when he brings people to NXT like Vince was. So, yeah, I'm going to be honest. I forgot what the original question was. No,
is Jade
no.
The one to...
Is Jade the one? Oh, gosh. I think they are both such good choices for both such good reasons. It might not be either of them, but I don't think Becky holds this championship for too much longer. I think she's done what she was there to do, and thanks, Bex. And it's very cool that she got to be a Grand Slam winner. I will say right now that, oh gosh, I can see Lyra becoming champion and then just being completely transitional to Jade. I'm going to go with that. Bruce.
So I have a reason why I think it's going to be Jade, and that's just because for pure vanity purposes, I said when they announced her signing WWE, I said give her a year in NXT, she's going to be unstoppable. And having her be champion would mean she'd be in NXT hopefully for a year. But like you said, the reps, being at the PC, being on TV every week, and to your point about AEW, she wasn't even the main women's champion, and she was sort of who people went to see in the women's division in AEW, right? So just star power. I'm trying to think of the last big signing in wrestling where you just looked at the person and you went, that's a star. And I'm trying to think, and it's kind of hard right now because a lot of the people that did become stars, they weren't thought of that immediately. And you look at her, and it's just, it's inarguable that she has the star power, the charisma, the presentability of everything you want in a star. She carries herself. I think the biggest thing is she carries herself like that. And that's hard to teach in people. And that's not to say that she's arrogant or she's cocky. That's just to say that she knows that she is someone who brings all that to the table. and it's good for her that she was signed. What I really like about how they've done this is not, you know, as you said, from the beginning, they've treated her as a star. They signed her and kept her name, and they hyped it all over the place. But I really like how they've been having her make appearances on all three shows, because while she's signed, she's in kayfabe, a brand-free agent. So having her appear on all three shows gives you a little bit more of that enticement to keep seeing, to keep watching to see where she does end up. And so the motion she made at the end of the night with the clock, or the tapping her wrist like for a watch, that could be indicative of her either coming to NXT and or her making her decision on where she's going to be for the foreseeable future, or both. And, you know, I get your idea, Kelly, about having Valkyria win and be transitional. I did like Valkyria bring up the Irish thing at first, and how she wanted to be the first Irish champion, but Becky took it away from her. Then I thought about it, like, oh, but didn't you lose a title match or two? So didn't you have a shot to also become a champion? You just didn't do it in time? That aside, I like how it was set up. I like the little interaction that they've had. I like the interaction that they've had as well. But if it was up to me, because of the potential she has, and I don't want to do anything I could to stunt it or to diminish any confidence, I would put Jade Cargill in NXT. Becky retains. Jade comes out, and she doesn't have to even physically touch her. Just come out, stare her down, point at the title, and then that's your ending shot of Halloween Havoc Night 1. And I think from there you can have a segment on Night 2 building that feud, and then maybe at Deadline, if you go to that length, or you hype a really big episode as Jade's debut, and it's her versus Becky for the title, and you make her the champion and go from there. I think, you know, your plan works. I think my plan works. Either way, I think sooner or later, Jade Cargill is going to have championship gold around her waist.
Yeah, and I think she's the kind of character that works best with it, to throw in other people's faces. Whereas, like, Roxanne Perez is better at being somebody who wants it. Yes. Indeed. I feel the same. We feel the same. Bruce, no, you just talked. Nate, why don't you talk next?
So Gallus,
oh, well done.
God, yeah. No, I know. Jade Cargill, she's clearly a star. I'm really happy to see her in WWE, and I think they're doing this correctly. Like, you know, I think it was Bruce that just said, you know, they're putting her on every single show. I think she's showed up on SmackDown, Raw, and NXT at this point. You know, they're putting her all over social media. I mean, she's definitely going to be somebody that they're going to be relying heavily on. And I think NXT is probably the place that she's going to wind up. I think probably should wind up, especially where they seem like they want to put more of an emphasis on NXT right now. They've got Becky down there. They had, I mean, I like the way that Carmelo put it. It was like he was playing WWE game on universe mode last week. You know, that's so true with some of the people that came out on NXT. But, you know, so they're putting a much more of a focus on NXT lately, it seems, in terms of like trying to maybe draw ratings. And I'm sure it has something to do with, you know, the whole, you know, TV rights deals and all of that, trying to look for, you know, entice a buyer and whatnot. The way they're going to, if that's what they want to do, sure, build something around Jade Cargill. Lyra Valkyria, you know, we all kind of thought she was the one that was going to be next in line for the title. But at this point, I don't think so. I think what's going to happen is Becky's here. Not only she's here to, you know, build Lyra up as another star, not necessarily to drop the title to her, but at least give her that Becky Lynch rub. And I think this is going to be a mechanism to get the title on Jade. That's kind of the way it seems to go for me. I don't know exactly how they're going to get there, but I think that's probably the direction they're going to be going. At least it makes no sense to me anyway.
Last thing I'll add about Jay, too, is that they're they're pairing her up in scenes against the top women in WWE every time she appears on screen, or in the main event picture like tonight with Lyra Valkyrie and her match next week. So they haven't missed a beat in the presentation of Jade Cargill at all since they announced her signing.
Ryan, as always, we thank you. And Nate, did you say somebody else had their hand raised?
We do. It's 914, and I believe this is what we'll find out. To the Sean or Brad. I think it's Brad.
Hey, John in Missouri, how you guys doing tonight?
Wow. All right.
I'm kidding. It's Brad in Florida. It's Brad in Florida. I was just playing around with you guys.
Oh, my God. No, you know what? I'm so glad you did. Yeah. That was fantastic.
John in Missouri. Are you guys surprised Tony D'Angelo didn't even touch that pasta with the sauce tonight? I mean, the whole thing was uneaten.
That's what
was
I thought,
uneaten.
Too. Yeah.
I couldn't. I mean, there's starving kids in Africa. I mean, come on.
Starving.
Was that a pre-taped segment, or was that up there? Because pre-taped segments, I can understand that, because then you got to reshoot it, and you're always eating, and all of a sudden you're super full, and it's really hard to keep track of for the editor, where sandwiches grow in one scene and then go away in the next. But no, he was up. They were on the perch, right? They were doing that live?
Yeah, I believe so.
There is, frankly, no excuse for him not to have stuffed his face.
Well, I thought it was fun. It's great to have the three of you guys all together here tonight. And the one thing I wanted to bring up was, and it's almost something I couldn't even envision, because he's like almost like I can't even envision Cody being a bad guy, but I have to bring up this possibility. Do you guys think it was possibly Wes Lee who attacked Carmelo? Trick. Because he did leave in a fury. He was in that championship picture. I would imagine he's coming back soon. I mean, it's just so out of character for Wes Lee, but again, the way he left, I don't think it's like a 0% chance. I was wondering what you guys thought, because I was thinking that, and could it be him that is the person?
I'm going to give that a non-zero chance also, because that was a major part of his story with Trick and Mello. And the idea of him disturbing stuff to the point where he messes up that friendship and does everything he does to get that friendship destroyed, and then goes after Hayes, would be kind of a continuation you could do with him. The only trepidation I have there, and it is significant, is that Wes is made to be an underdog babyface. He's got the size, he's got the moveset, everything. He would basically have to relearn his in-ring to even work as a heel. And that can be done. We've seen people do it. We've seen people lean into even using the same moves in different fashions. Like, that's potentially possible, but I don't know that Wes has a moveset that easily translates to heeldom. Now we can do it. He can do it. We can see that on the mic and everything like that. He can lean that way if needed. But it's a non-zero chance, and it's a compelling story, one of many. I'm going to say no, just because somebody would have had to get in the way and say, but Wes is who Wes should be right now, Bruce.
So I like the Lexus King idea better, even though I also advocated against that earlier because I'd rather see him face Wes Lee. but I do think that if you're looking at Wes Lee before the last 2 or 3 months, it would be definitely against that character. But he was trending a bit more aggressive, aggravated toward the end, and some of his things started coming off as a bit heelish because of that attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So as Kelly was saying, we've seen it on the mic. He can make that disposition change. The thing is, though, as Kelly was also saying, a lot of his signature maneuvers are geared around his athleticism and his ability to, and not many heels can get away with that unless you pull a King of the Cruiserweights and make sure your red arrow, your black arrow is, deadly, and you use the brutalize, you know, the Rings of Saturn to torture them into submission or something. I think a lot of times when this sort of change happens, the character who's becoming a heel fails to adapt, especially a finisher that is more aggressive, more, I want to just strand away from saying heels, but more just, you know, less of the acrobatics and more of just trying to impact them with as much force as possible. And I think if they're going to have that with Wesley, he can't do the cardiac kick anymore as a finisher. He needs to figure out something. He could do the spiral tap, but he has to make it look like it's even more powerful and aggressive than what he does with it right now. With his size, again, as Kelly was saying, it's going to be hard to make him that sort of heel. Yeah, I'm going to say there's a possibility, but it's probably the least likely of what we've discussed tonight for the Trick Williams attack. I think it's more likely that Ilya attack Trick rather than anyone we've discussed so far tonight, just because I think you could rationalize it as Ilya saying four people is too many variables. Like I was more concerned with doing three and whatnot, and just trying to sow more discord between Hayes and Williams. So, and I wouldn't mind seeing Ilya Dragunov as a heel. I don't think I've ever seen him as a heel in WWE, so I think he could pull it off.
I definitely can see him pulling it off, but he is the kind of babyface that really energizes me. So I would be bummed out. There is no babyface I like to cheer for more than like somebody strong style, and he is everything I like about New Japan. And getting into somebody there with fighting spirit. Oh boy, oh boy, I love him a lot. Nate.
So. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Wesley was necessarily the one behind the attack, but I am also with you guys. There's certainly a non-zero chance of it was him. Now, if it was, like, let's go under the assumption that it was him, and you know, the turning him heel. Like, there's a few different things here. So, you know, as Bruce started to talk about, we did start to see some shades of a turn coming from Wesley before he left. He I can't remember specifics offhand, but I know there was a few times where he did come off a little bit more heelish before, you know, he took his ball and went home, for lack of a better term. So I could kind of see him, you know, kind of see that being the direction. Now, sure, his mic skills, not worried about that. You guys are worried about, you know, the in-ring stuff, which sure, I'm worried about too, but we're right now on the main roster, we're seeing two kind of high flyers all of a sudden become, you know, heels, you know, with Bobby Lashley, and that's the Street Profits. And, you know, one high flyer. Yeah. But I mean, you know, Ford has had to, you know, kind of manipulate his style a little bit. And I think they're both going to have to kind of manipulate their styles a little bit to make it so they're, you know, not quite as fan friendly anymore, or fan favorite-y or whatever you want to say, well loved by the fans. You know, not necessarily just getting rid of like the solo cups and stuff, but, you know, in terms of their moveset and whatever. So, I mean, it's certainly possible. And I think if anybody in the NXT or on the NXT roster could do it, it'd be Wes Lee. I mean, we saw him take, you know, the situation where he was a tag team star and all of a sudden get thrown into a singles, you know, singles mix and became, you know, one of the greatest North American champions NXT has seen. So I think it's possible if, you know, if it was him and it was to, you know, he was to be the one, you know, the attack and they, you know, we're going to go a heel route with him. I think he could pull it off, all the way around.
Brad, do you have any more for us?
Yeah. I mean, and I don't even know if he has to be like, you know, obviously it's a heinous act in the wrestling world, but I don't even know if he has to be like a full heel. Like it could just be like a temporary thing. Like, I was so
that
mad. I was so with
against Trick.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Like I was so livid and I was out of my mind and, you know, maybe even after, you know, I don't know, whatever, but I agree with you. It's very hard to envision Wes and the way that he wrestles and everything is anything other than a good guy, but whatever. You know who really impressed me tonight, and you guys might think I'm crazy and might think like I'm over the top about this, but I thought Ariana Grace is I honestly thought she was terrific. Like really
I gushed
good.
In my recap. I gushed.
Oh,
gushed
you did? Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it's not always about being the best in-ring wrestler. And I'm not saying she's bad. I don't think she's bad at all. I actually think she's very good. But, like, you know, someone like L.A. Knight, like we're not going to compare L.A. Knight in the ring to a Ricochet. Or, I mean, if it was all about just who's the best in the ring, Ricochet would be the absolute top of WWE or someone like that. But Ariana Grace, she's got such a great personality and such a way in the ring of communicating, and even her promos, you know, I think it has to do a lot with who her father is and, you know, her in beauty pageants and having to like kind of act her whole life. But, you know, I loved when she started that match saying, kiss my hand, you know, like I'm this diva queen and, oh, you're not going to kiss my hand. And then when she would land the move, she would be all happy and smiling. And then when what's her name would kick out of it, she would be pissed. You know what I mean? Like she like really mad on her face, like just the dichotomy in her personality of like, you know, from going from happy to sad to angry to mad to like, she was just really good and she's really compelling. And I think she has, if she sticks with this, which I would imagine she will, I think she has an incredibly bright future. Like, I think she could be a top woman that is being overlooked right now, and maybe overlooked because she just came back, but still, you know, I feel like they didn't use her that much when she was there the first time. I know she was also just coming up before her injury. So I wanted to know what you guys thought of her. I mean, obviously Kelly, you gave me a little bit, but I wanted to know if you guys agree with me that she is her potential and how good she was tonight.
Well, they're certainly not overlooking her much because they had her win a match on TV, which they don't do for just anyone. And they had her move forward.
In-ring promo before the match.
Yes, the only one they trusted to have the in-ring promo. The other three all had inset promos, and they were, you know, they were. Jada there. Parker's was nice-ish. Brinley Reese's was nice. And Petrovic also did one. And she really was the standout here. And I'll cover both of those matches because why the heck not? I liked Jada Parker a lot, and and her having to do that job to Carmen Petrovic was kind of criminal. Like I get that you can't do Petrovic against the other baby face. That doesn't do either of them any real favors at this early stage of them trying to generate heat in the right way, putting them in a position to fail. But Carmen Petrovic just doesn't have it. Like, she's not TV ready. I mean, she's maybe level up ready. I don't know that she's NXT ready. And I don't know what that means all the time because that changes sometimes. But for me, like, if everybody in the ring was a Carmen Petrovic, I wouldn't watch the show. And so there was that. But getting back to the question at hand, Ariana Grace getting that segment was wonderful. The music is awesome. I mean, the music is so Beauty Queen. Like, normally they take something and in this era, they kind of make it, they fit it to be something that sounds like a wrestling theme, even if it's inspired by the something else. With her, they said, no, just do the Beauty Queen music. This is like an 80s throwback character where they really just went full on with it. Her thinking she's still in the Beauty Queen world, doing the waves. She did the right amount. She didn't do too much posturing during the match that it actually took away from the match. She did it at the right times and made it work. Her facial expressions, I loved. When music played, after she was trying to graciously accept a bye into the second round, she looked like nothing bad had ever happened to her before. Like, she'd never been told that she couldn't have something before. I adored her. I adored her. I loved her and Jada Parker both so much that I think it's too bad that neither one will be in the finals because they love Lola Vice. And I get it. Lola Vice has some name cachet she's coming in with. But Parker and Grace are both going to leapfrog her. No problem. No problem. That's just the way it is. I don't know who's supposed to be first on this one.
Let's go, Nate.
Let's go, Nate.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the same in the same boat with you. You know, Parker and you know, she just kind of start with her. She obviously had to do the job tonight for Petrovic, right? It's Itch. Yes, Petrovic. You know, Petrovic seems like she might have something. Like, she didn't seem to me like she was, you know, like an indie talent or anything like that, but certainly a talent that needs a little bit more development. There's something there, though. There's something there with her, and I can't quite put my finger on it. I might need to see a little bit more out of her, but there's something there with her. But, yeah, Parker, the way she was selling, she and maybe it was her that was making her, making Petrovic just look better to me. Maybe that's what it was. But yeah, I noticed, you know, she was much better at her selling and just kind of her overall snappiness in the ring. And it just seemed like she kind of has it a little bit better. But yeah, you know, unfortunately, she did take the loss there tonight. Ariana Grace, though, she, like, as you guys were just saying, I mean, I can't say enough about her, enough good about her. I think this is a great gimmick, and I like the fact that, you know, Booker T actually did something awesome on commentary, and he starts putting her over, talking about Charmel and how she's a former Miss, was it Miss Universe, I think she said, or I think he said. I can't remember what it was, but, and, you know, just to kind of start, like, making those comparisons, and, like, every, you know, if, you know, you're kind of a longtime WWE fan, you know who Charmel is, you know, and so to kind of get that comparison from Booker T, I like that right off the bat. So, but anyway, I'm not going to kind of like gush any more about her because we've done that enough and that I'm on par with that. But one thing that I do want to say is, you know, and this is something that I've heard multiple talents say in, you know, different interviews and documentaries and stuff, is sometimes an injury is the best thing to happen to you. You sit out for months and all you can do is think. All you can think about, you know, gimmick and you know, how you're going to come back. And you know, it's I'm wondering if that might be the case here. You know, she just had all this time to think about what she wants to do when she gets back. You know, now we're kind of seeing the culmination of that. So, yeah.
Bruce, on the breakout.
Nathan took my point, man. All right, so let's go to Jada Parker, Carmen Petrovic. I was about ready to just say strap the rocket to Jada Parker. Just even when she entered, like, even her – of the inset promos we had tonight from the three, hers was the best. It wasn't a high bar, but she had more – character presented more charisma than the others, and then in her entrance that shown a lot more than during the little incident promo. The thing I didn't like about Petrovic this match was her offense just did not look good to me. Her timing and her distance are just not there yet, as you said. Probably good for Level Up, but for right now she reminds me of last year when Sloan Jacobs was in the tournament. And Sloan Jacobs wasn't quite ready to be at that point yet. Out of the eight women that were there, and out of the eight women that we've seen thus far, or that we saw in this breakout tournament, she's the one that needs just to be on a level up a bit more than on TV proper. But it's going to be interesting to see if Vice can be the one to, you know, carry her to a decent match. We've seen Vice get better and better each time in the ring, including her first round match. Was it last week? Yeah, when Nate and I remarked how it was sort of, it was odd, but it was also the one match that was really purely NXT right now in a night full of, you know, people from Raw and SmackDown being on the show. We said that it was probably going to be Jordan Vice Finals. I really wonder what would have happened if Jakara Jackson hadn't been hurt and if she did indeed face Ariana Grace tonight, because I wanted to see a Jakara Jackson Lola Vice final, even though I know they don't really do heel-heel, but I just feel like the characters in that and the charisma and that sort of a match, especially with Metaphor there, could have really brought something out special and made this tournament more memorable. But to Ariana Grace, love the presentation, love her promo, love her acting ability. Nate took my point about the injury being probably the best thing, but I'll still spin it and say, I think the injury was great for her in terms of her in-ring work, because I think she was very crisp tonight. There was more potential there in the ring than I remember seeing when she was in the breakout tournament last year. And granted, she did tear her ACL, I think, during the tournament last year. But to me, there's a lot there. She has more potential than her father ever did, I think. And she gets it, is what I think is the best way to put it, is she gets what it means to be a pro wrestler. And again, probably because it's in her blood, her dad runs a wrestling school as well. So that could be a big reason why she just seems to understand what it is to be this character right now in NXT.
Jakara Jackson versus Ariana Grace makes so little sense from a heat gaining standpoint that I'd probably be willing to hear them out if they said that, like, they announced her knowing that she wasn't going to be in the tournament.
I could see that too.
Because it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Also, Noam Dar did not have his face on the screen today and still got the funniest line when he said that he was afraid that Jakara Jackson was going to lose her leg. Like, I think they're going to move the leg. It
you
was
might
just...
lose it. And Mackenzie's reaction was, what are you talking about? They were going to say she didn't need surgery. We're talking about losing it. It was so good.
Yeah, Mackenzie just has to play the straight man, and that is something she is willing to do.
So good.
Oh, just a joy. Brad, do you have more for us?
No, it's just with Ariana, she not only like looks the part, she's so funny. I mean, she is like her father. Like Bruce said, you know, she's got it in her blood, but like her father was so hilarious, and she's hilarious too. Like, you know, just a lot of the stuff she did was so funny. I loved it. So the last thing is on Dom and Nathan Frazier. You know, they had that brawl and everything. I love how they do this, like how they get all, like whether it's Lyra with Becky or they're, you know, how they're getting like the people that they are seemingly high on in a space with a main roster person that they can work with or whatever. Like, I love that they're doing that recently. And I feel like Frazier, even though he's, you know, done some decent things and whatever, I feel like this is going to really be his time to shine with Dominic. And, you know, Dom's kind of, you know, I don't want to say slow, but he's kind of got like a more of like a lumbering style, and I think it will mesh very well with Frazier's incredible speed and everything. And I just wanted to hear, like obviously, I assume you guys believe this will be Frazier's biggest feud, obviously, so far. And what do you think he is the one that will take, I shouldn't say the one because Trick took it off him, but like the one that will long-term take the North American title off of Dominic?
I can see that. I think Frazier's another guy who is made to be without a title, but chasing one, but they might as well see what they got if he can run with it. I think that they're not going to hotshot it again right away. You know what I took from this? The first thing I took from this is, why did Rhea Ripley show up for this? Like, she
totally... Oh, yo, man, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I thought the
Go
same
ahead.
Thing. I said, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I thought the same thing. I was like, they flew her down for that? Like, just to drag him out of the ring? Like, that must have sucked for her. Like, she could have had a night at home with her fiance or whatever. Like, instead she had to go down to literally pull Dominic out of the ring and stare, and that was it for 5 seconds.
Yeah, and I guess if you think that that's worth it enough, that Frazier will gain something big enough from having Dom prone and he's only saved because of mommy, then that's worthwhile. But yeah, I was sitting here thinking, like, okay, what else could she be there for? Does she have to shoot segments to promote Dom's matches? Is she working with people down there, and there's like a multi-pronged reason for her to be there? Because Rhea is like maybe the success story in NXT. Like her and Bianca are right there, like maybe the story in NXT, because Rhea came in looking like creator wrestler two and was, and had nothing. Like she was just kind of, she did uninteresting offense well. She did it well, but she didn't have interesting offense, and she gave it no, she didn't have any English on anything. She was just very, very bland. And I thought she was going to flame out, and then she found out who she was supposed to be. So maybe she's there because, I mean, you know, what better inspiration could there be to NXT wrestlers could be like, hey, I came in looking at this. Like, she just shows a video of herself and says, that's me. And they're like, no, it's not. Like, no, I promise you, that was me doing a whole lot of nothing and being a whole lot of nothing, and now I'm this. And I won the Royal Rumble, and I'm main eventing. So, well, so cool stuff.
You bring up Ripley, and I put a tweet in our group chat today. It's the 5-year anniversary of when Tegan Nox blew her knees against Ripley in the Mae Young Classic, the second one. And
5 years? How the hell old am I?
Or 5 years? I don't remember how long it was. Maybe it was it was, the anniversary of that. And that was the moment. I remember when all four of us were like, okay, I see it with Rhea Ripley. She's definitely time. If you remember, she maintained the heel act, just smirking and like lounging on the corner and just playing it up like, ha, sucks for her. Glad I'm not her. I'm going to win this kind of thing, right? When I saw that, I said, yep, she's going to be a big star. And
she could have gone into shutdown mode, mm-hmm. and then they just focused on the announcers. And that's what you'd expect in that moment with the X going up by their referee. But they were able to focus on the ring because Rhea was doing such cool stuff. And they had to have thought that too, like, what a pro that she knows that her friend just got hurt really bad here. And she made it work because Rhea was not, I think she was meant to lose that match. Yep. So she got one match longer in the tournament than she was supposed to have. She wasn't going to win the tournament. The tournament final was as intended from what I've heard, but she was going to lose that match.
And it wasn't just creator wrestler too. It was Charlotte Flair clone of Charlotte Flair just came out of high school or something. Like it just wasn't good. So the fact that she made that sort of transition and made it pretty quickly. I remember when she lost the UK Women's Championship tournament, I was apoplectic, like, why would you put this on Toni Storm and Rhea Ripley's right there? And I think I was proven right in the end on that one. But, yeah, I just once I saw that match or what she did after Nox blew her knees, and, I mean, Tegan Nox on the show tonight, so we can get to her too, but that's when I knew.
And because we were talking about Dom, ostensibly, Dominic and Nathan Fraser, I will say that this could be a situation where they're playing it by ear because guys are gaining something by working with these main roster talents. So maybe they just see how long these main roster talents are willing to do it before they say, hey, can I just sink my teeth into something on the main roster? But I think that Fraser gains a lot from this win or lose. I'm going to say lose. I'm going to say Dom hangs on to it a little longer. I don't know who that person is. I don't know if they know who that person is.
Alexis King, eventually.
With Dom?
Yes.
Hmm. Okay. That's going to require some changes in who Alexis King is. He certainly seems like a heel to me now. But it doesn't mean it has to stay that way.
If Rhea's there, right next to Dom, they're gonna definitely cheer for Mommy and kind of make it that the heel doesn't matter.
Huh. I don't see that, but I'm surely intrigued by it.
I'm more interested in that than I would be if he was, you know, with Trick or Mello or anything right now.
Okay. Let me throw to Nate and we'll think about this.
No, sounds good. So I'm actually, I think I've got a dip, guys. I think I fell asleep while you guys were talking. And it's not that you guys
were that boring, huh?
No, I have just, I've got nonstop all day. So.
Well, you are recording. Are you? You're going to be able to send this?
I'm going to, yep. I'm going to just kind of going to put myself on mute and listen to the rest of the show, and I'll handle it. But
I can dig that. So I guess we got to face this now, Bruce. This
well, no is, problem.
This is now.
No. Here, let me talk about the Fraser and Dom stuff while you ruminate on the Lexus King stuff. So I think Fraser does lose. I don't think Dom drops the title to Fraser. I think there's no bigger moment that Fraser gained than when he just walked up to Dom tonight and popped him right in the mouth and punked him and just went out there and did it. He was like, hey, Dom, boom, and just went right at it. And I think that was probably ideal way for that to have happened instead of trying to have some sort of promo segment between the two in the back and then go from there, just going straight at it, I think gave Nathan Fraser a lot more. It made me believe more that he has a chance in the match, even though I think he's going to lose. More so than, you know, Chase U winning that opener against all those teams and eventually pinning Kurt. Okay. Garza and I was about to combine their last names again. So to me, I like the hype. I haven't really gone back through last night, but I saw that because I had work and everything and had a really just a lot of stuff happened yesterday with the promotion. But I saw that there was an interaction between the two on Raw last night that kind of set up into tonight. And I think that having Fraser do this was not only the best way to build the match, but come Raw or SmackDown, wherever they're going to hype it, they have that clip to show people who don't normally watch NXT that, oh, okay, I might be interested in this because of how he just went straight at Dom. So I think from that perspective, they did a good job. And the reason I just dropped Lexus King in there is earlier you brought up the main event and making him a big player, and they used to do that. I could see them doing something with him here. Or, you know, if they do have Fraser go over, then you could have King come in and immediately just trounce him after Fraser wins the match and kind of announces his stuff that way. But, yeah, I just think that it's better to get him onto that championship trajectory than have him be in the straight-up main event picture.
Brad, if you got one more, go ahead.
No, that's it. Thanks for taking the call, guys, and I love listening to you. Good night to Nate as well.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, guys.
Visit from the Sandman over there. Thanks, Brad, as always. Only a few things that I have not crossed out on the show. Here, Shotzi beat Kiana James in 8:38, which would feel long, but that was the that one went over the commercial. That was the crossover match, which was no, that wasn't. The crossover match was Lyra Valkyria versus Tegan Nox. Thought it was interesting that Tegan Nox got the crossover match. That one went 11:29, which was even more surprising to go that long, but we did have to get Chelsea Green in there, Piper Niven, and finally Becky Lynch. Women got a lot of time tonight. They got the second, third, fourth, and fifth matches out of the six. Didn't get to open or close, but they did every other match on the show. I will say we had two matches for Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal, Lights Out match, and Devil's Playground. They sure were excited about these. Too excited to tell us what these matches entail. This is a week that you've probably picked up some extra viewers that weren't there before last week, because last week you picked up an absolute buttload of people. I know a lot of them didn't stay, but a lot of them probably did. And you have this wheel that you don't explain. They spin it and you don't explain why. A match comes up and you don't explain what the match is. These scenes are so simple. And even if you don't do it in the scene, you put it in the mouth of Vic. And Vic isn't smart enough to know that he's supposed to do that on his own. So you got to tell him that after the scene, you're like, hey, tell them what this is. Don't just say, oh, it's going to be Devil's Playground for these two. Because that's what he'll do. Because he's not bright. But anyway, that's what happened with Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal. Devil's Playground is, I think they've done it before. I think that it is a weapons match, more or less, I think. Lights Out match, we can more or less envision. It seems like a joke that they would actually get the Lights Out match, but apparently that's what they're going to do. Anything on those two matches we didn't cover, Valkyria over Knox, Shotzi over James, and spinning the wheel and making the aforementioned deal.
I'll hit the wheel first because we're on this. I tweeted, it's so convenient that the wheel just happened to be there as Shotzi walked by, yeah? So there's that. She just happened to walk right by where the wheel was under the thing. Or was it Shotzi? Whoever it was. And then they spun the wheel.
First one was Gigi. And it's like,
Gigi. Sorry, Gigi.
Why
yeah.
is it under the thing in the first place? And she didn't know that. Okay, you go on.
Yeah. I didn't really like Beauty's promo there either very much. But we saw a Lights Out match with Tiffany Stratton, and I'm blanking on who it was a couple months ago. And basically what it was that the lights were out except for like two really, really dimmed lights. And you could kind of see what was going on in the ring, but it was basically it's not the AEW Lights Out match where anything goes and doesn't go on your record, obviously, because there's no record in WWE. But I'm assuming, as you said, that the Devil's Playground match is just kind of a themed no DQ match. So really, you're having the same type of match, essentially, with a slightly different overall gimmick. It's just going to be when they have Halloween Havoc, especially, is when they tend to have so many of these contrived gimmick matches, and they tend to just, I don't want to say bleed into each other, but with WWE style and not being as aggressive or bloody as other organizations, it makes it hard to find things that are different between each match without seeing the same spots over and over. So that's my fear going into these two matches in Halloween Havoc. I don't know if they're both for one night or if they're on different nights or whatnot, but that's my concern. Now, when we get to the matches themselves, so Shotzi, we've made no secret of the fact that we haven't been the biggest Shotzi fans, but maybe it was because of her gear, or maybe Kiana James is just at a level where, or maybe they're both just improved. I thought this was probably the best Shotzi match I've seen in a while. There really wasn't any, she didn't go into the, okay, I know she yelled or did the scream early on, but she didn't have as much of the histrionics as we're used to seeing with her and the whole, you know, when she had the tank and the ball pick gimmick and all that. I mean, she rode out in the tank still, but, I felt like there was more alertness. That's not the word I'm looking for.
So, but there, activity?
Selectivity, but also urgency in her. There's like a little more urgency in her offense tonight. And even when she went up for the senton, she didn't take too long. She just immediately did her pose and went to it. And I always find it hilarious that Shotzi's the one wrestler I've seen who does a top rope senton who literally just falls into it instead of leaps. And I wonder if how much more effective that makes it. But so that match, yeah, it was there. It was better than I expected it to be. So good for them. And then the Knox match with Lyra Valkyria, and I made a note of this in the chat, and Kelly had it in his analysis of the match, but Tegan Knox just looks really slow out there. And yes, I know she's had a lot of injuries, but especially when they had their rope run teams where they were going at the same time, she looked so much slower compared to Valkyrie. And when they finally hit each other on the cross bodies, they were three quarters of the way across the ring instead of halfway because Valkyrie was just that much faster. And Knox was just that much slower. And it just, look, again, everyone knows I'm not the biggest fan of Tegan Knox, and I haven't been. I just don't think it helps her that she's out there, and there's just that much of a disparity in what's happening in the ring. And I don't know if having Valkyrie take so long to beat someone that Becky Lynch didn't really have too much troubles with makes her chances next week seem that much better than they were before tonight.
All right, we've got just a couple of things we didn't cover. Blair talked about Gigi, basic stuff. Fallon Henley, or possibly Huntley, talked to Tiffany Stratton. A decent line. Tiffany did it okay. Whatever. And then a lot of silent women in the background. Great way to put over your breakout tournament is by having six people be background characters in a scene. Von Wagner, hand me the damn band. it was this scene.
I'm gonna mute myself. Hold on.
No. I mean, might as well get our honest opinions. Is this the best or the worst scene we've seen all year on NXT? Because it's bad, but they know what they have in Von Wagner. They know they have a guy who cannot act a lick, and they keep giving him these scenes, and they put the overbearing music on behind it. And this laugh, I think this is what they're going for. Because, like they're out there, and they're not telling Von, mind you, that they're going for unknowing comedy. But it feels like, how can they not know what they got here, where Robert Stone is just working his ass off and Vaughn is just, he's trying to pull this band and he's not really looking like he's trying because he doesn't know how to look like he's trying. He just knows how to look like he's failing. And I can't do it. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. I can't do it. I'm sorry. It's hand me the damn band. Hand me the damn band. Might be my favorite thing that I've heard on NXT in a very long time. I'm surprised that neither of them asked about it. But how is – I can imagine – I don't know how I can imagine Ryan asking about it. But Brad, I could imagine starting with that and going on a long rant. And then after we kind of try to explain why this is, he's like, but I don't get it. I don't get it. And I'm like, hey, man, we don't either. But they showed it to us. That shit happened.
I blame Sean in Tennessee.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Dan in Jackson Hole had all the answers. But he didn't call in today. Yeah, Von Wagner happened. And then, of course, Mr. Stone goes on to have a great scene, but only because Von Wagner's not in it. He has a really good scene with Braun Breaker, where this is the Braun that he was made to be, where he's a brutal, mean villain who's a butthole, yeah, but he's also really good at suckering in the good guy to do what he wants him to do. So he suckers in Mr. Stone into making this match and immediately regretting it after he said the words. And by the way, Stone's face there was perfect. Braun's face there was perfect. Mackenzie's face was perfect. It was just a great scene that I did not know that these three were going to have a scene. But I thought it was good. And I can see Braun losing this match. And I can actually see it easily. I like to the point where if I had to make bets on this show, I would maybe make Mr. Stone win this. He won't dominate Braun. He won't look like the winner. He'll maybe snake out of there, whether it's because of Vaughn or because of Braun's hubris or whatever it is or some combination. I think that Mr. Stone is doing great work. I think Braun's easily doing the best work that he's done week after week after week. He's showing why he fits in this role. And Mr. Stone, my feeling is he brings too much value to be tied to Von Wagner, but they're making those work in the way that they can. And in my recap, I said, I'm just going to remind everybody that Von and Wagner was the big thing to the point that he beat Kyle O'Reilly. He got the Kyle O'Reilly rub on Kyle's way out
in December of 2021. Okay, Bruce.
Yeah, so look, that scene started and I couldn't stop laughing. And then once you said, give me the damn band, I was howling with laughter. I may have upset my upstairs neighbor, who knows. I was just laughing so hard. I know it's supposed to be serious. I know the scene's supposed to be a serious scene. I just can't take it seriously. Because it just feels like, I know he's trying, but it almost looks like he just doesn't give enough crap to even give an effort in these scenes. And it sucks because you have Stone out there just doing everything he can, every single thing he can, right? And yeah, it's the unintentional comedy is Oscar worthy. Like, it's so good. But in general, yeah, he's been there almost as long as, probably the longest of anybody on the NXT roster. And they keep trying with him. And there's just, I don't know, there's just, I just don't know what. Then the scene with Mitchell and Breaker and Stone, and Stone just, he's so heated. And it's not just that Braun is a villain. It's just how unrepentant he is about his actions, and especially how they affected Von Wagner. And that got him so fired up. He just, out of pure passion, made the challenge, and immediately he's like, oh no, I didn't just say that, did I? Like, you could see it in his face, and it was so good, so well played. I think this is going to be the Hurricane over the Rock next week with, of course, Stone playing the role of the Hurricane and Breaker playing the role of the Rock. Breaker doesn't need to win, especially this, to you could say, oh, he's going to lose something by losing to someone who's so much below him. But the whole point of this is Breaker is so overconfident in the fact that he's going to annihilate Stone that he's probably just going to get rolled up for it the way they should go. Like you were saying, it's immediately what I was thinking when the challenge was made. So, if they don't go that route, I think they would be doing themselves a disservice.
Baby faces were too heelish tonight, but I hope Mr. Stone is extremely heelish on Braun. Like, low blows, whatever it takes, if he has to.
I want to see a good old-fashioned back rake.
Mm-hmm. Brass knucks? Sure. And Mr. Stone, full of fighting spirit. He's the reason I watch New Japan, folks. Mr. Stone and guys like him. PWTorch, NXT at gmail.com. Jared Buhager, our buddy JB from Detroit, sends us this. Number one, he only did one, so I guess he didn't have to take that. He normally does like seven. Is anyone else a little bit weirded out and uncomfortable by these Brian Pillman Jr. intro vignettes? It seems like a really weird way to introduce him and probably not what I would have recommended. Also, I know that we joke about it all the time, but Lexus King really does sound like a porn name. Love the show and go VIP. I love these vignettes. And as I stated earlier, I think that Brian Pillman, the senior, would have been very proud if he saw his son knowing how to work the business the same way that he did. I genuinely feel that. Not just being maudlin. I really, really feel like I see him being good at the business in the same way his dad was, which is so weird because he didn't really get to know him. I think we're supposed to be made uncomfortable. That is the point of them. So if you're uncomfortable, they're working. Because that's how you're supposed to feel about that. Lexus King, a porn name? Oh, hell yes. It really does sound like one. Perhaps a female porn name. But maybe I'm only saying that because I literally have a counterpart.
There is a Kelly Wells. If Kelly Wells is a porn name, then any name is a porn name.
Yes, and she exists, folks. It's not her real name, but she took my name because it's so damn sexy. She had to have it, apparently. But yeah, I like the vignettes, but the name I don't love. But I also don't hate, which does happen to me sometimes with these name changes. I'm fairly agnostic toward it. And as we learn who he is, I'll probably learn whether I like the name or don't, Bruce.
In terms of the name, you weren't on the show with us last week, but the reports were that Lexus was for his in honor of his sister, and then King, as he described in the vignette last week, was to honor the man who did raise him. So it's a combination of those two, and yes, you connect to the whole thing of, well, maybe they shouldn't have wrestlers choose their own names. It's better than some of the names that WWE comes up with, so, you know, I'll say that. And Alexis is also, for the most part, I think you could make it a gender-neutral name. Especially outside the U.S., it tends to be more of a gender-neutral name. So if we look at it in that sense, I think the name is fine. I was a bit concerned they were just going to go with King at first, and wrong move. So I do like the fact here that they have introduced the Lexus part, but I wouldn't be surprised if eventually they do drop it and just call him King. I also, as we've discussed, huge fan of the vignettes. Really like the way that the very first one we saw was just a brief glimpse of a Bengals jersey and WCW logo. And then from that point, you have more and more be introduced to the, and then he started talking and discussing. Then you have more of a full exposition here tonight. And I think, again, my throat's still recovering from all the coughing I was doing, and it's just so much more dry from all those talking. Is not doing my throat really good tonight, but I think all the justifications he's given as to why he wants to separate himself from his dad make complete sense if you put yourself into his shoes. I think the context in which he's giving these justifications also makes it more believable to me as a viewer that father is who, because they've never really had that relationship, he does not want to be associated with that. And I'm sure he very well knows that his father and his name is basically one of the reasons he is where he's at and where he's been able to go. But in terms of kayfabe, this is a really good way to kind of present him and get him to, it's better than Ava being a part of Schism, right? This is a good way to get him and get people to think of him as outside of his father. And the thing again, though, while Pillman Sr., he was renowned for his in-ring work, especially at a time when that kind of style was not very common. The thing that people remember the most about him are things like what we see from his son. These sort of sit-down, intense interviews, right? It's not just Pillman got a gun. It's a lot of the things he did, even in that feud, where he's sitting down, he has a camera on him, but he's able to bring that intensity and that fury that we saw tonight with his son. We see a lot of that, so as much as he's going to try and be separated from that with his character, it's going to be impossible for viewers to make that separation fully, but they're doing a really great job in making us believe that he is this person that is called Lexus King and not Brian Pillman Jr.
We have one other email. This coming from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Am I the only one in the room that loves seeing Dom Dom get his tail whooped? It's definitely a cathartic experience for me. I mean, that's what you're supposed to feel toward Dom. So, again, it's working. That said, I'm enjoying this current iteration of the Women's Breakout Tournament. My general critique remains the same to previous versions. In most cases, the first time we meet these performers is the first time we learn part of their story, and once they lose, we may not see them again for a long while. Is that a flaw in the system, or am I making too much of that point? Essentially, how am I supposed to get behind rookie superstars if I know nothing about them? That out of the way, it seems to me that Kalani Jordan and Lola Vice will be the finalists. Is there anything you've seen thus far that runs counter to that? I'll just say no right now. Since we won't see the first four out of the tournament for a while, have you all had a chance to get a sense of the early potential for them? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Yeah, I don't think it's a problem that we're not going to see some of these for a while. I think that's fine. I like the breakout tournament because we don't care about them yet. I like that they're presenting people and making them sink or swim. I think it's a real interesting way to try to get a couple of people over and see what sticks. Jada Parker maybe wouldn't have been on TV for a while,
but she made a case to be on TV in the short term tonight. Like, she was booked to lose in the first round. She easily outclassed her opponent on the mic, in the ring, character work.
Presentation.
Yes, all of it was better than her opponent. So, yeah, they got Carmen Petrovich to go to the second round because they're using her as a babyface, and she is promoted as such. So she's going against the heel to, I think, these younger performers, even more than older performers, really need face heel dynamics to really understand the business. But Jada Parker made a great, great grasp for power where they maybe didn't think they were going to bring her up soon, but they had to look at this and be like, okay, she was on point. Like, she was really committed to what's a basic heel character, just like a big talker, but she was very good at it. She was really committed to the bit. So that, I think, is that alone is a reason to have this. Brinley Reese, I could go either way on this because Jakara Jackson, again, the Jackson where they put her in the tournament makes no sense to me. So I'd be willing to say she was never planned on being in the tournament at all, even though I really wanted to see her in the ring. But Brinley Reese, I thought, was perfectly okay. And her on the argument side that she was never supposed to be in this, she doesn't really have a character. She's just a babyface. Her character is good guy. That's it. And she was okay. She was committed to it. She just didn't really have anything to sink her teeth into. And then Ariana Grace, I mean, this is made to show off Ariana Grace. And Ariana Grace, if anything, is the kind of person who does not need to win this tournament to remain relevant. So maybe you give that to that second tier person who needs something to hang their hat on, because Ariana Grace is going to be over regardless because she just gets it. So, that's how I feel about these breakout tournaments. I love seeing that. I love seeing what I assume to be a wrestler who was meant to be a seat filler becoming someone where they're like, we got to get her on TV now. And if Jada Parker becomes a player in the next 6 months, I feel like we can say we knew that she opened some eyes in this tournament because she's got mine, folks. My eyes on her. I really dig her. And I knew Ariana Grace had something, but she really kind of showed it there. So did I miss any part of his email? No, Bruce.
I mean, it wasn't just Jada Parker. I was really impressed by Izzy Dame and her first round match with Kalani Jordan.
Yes.
And what she brought to the table. So I think right there, it's not just that. And what helps the women's division with these two particularly standing out in the short time they had in their matches, they are two women who are taller, who are bigger, who are stronger than most of the women in the division. Because right now it's basically Blair Davenport, Electra Lopez, if you have her in singles matches, which you really don't have her in tag team matches. Lola Vice, who's taller, but not necessarily bigger. So you get more diversity in terms of body, in terms of style, in terms of matches. And I think that's really good for the women's division. And yeah, those two women, especially because we knew what to expect from Jordan. We knew what to expect from Lola Vice. We basically knew what to expect from Ariana Grace. It just came out even more. It just came out better than we had anticipated, and we still anticipated that to be good. And yeah, we had high hopes for Jakara Jackson because her character is so good, and she has the body of someone who looks like she could go in the ring. We just haven't really been able to see that yet. So I feel like the women's tournament has done a good job in terms, you know, making these women seem viable. You know, Petrovich is the one out of the group that I discussed earlier where it's like, I'm not sure if this is the right spot for you right now, maybe next year's tournament. But then to his question about like not knowing any of these people, we didn't know who the hell Brock Purdy was until Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt last year in the last five games. All of a sudden, Brock Purdy comes out and he just lost his first game on Sunday as a Niners quarterback. We didn't know about him and he was a rookie. So it's not like you have to know about every single rookie, right? Not every first-round pick pans out. actually in the NFL. It's basically a 50-50 shot in the first round. So,
yeah, he was the last person drafted in the last round.
Exactly.
Like the 49ers could have done nothing, and it wouldn't have mattered because he just would have been a free agent, and they never would have tried him out.
And they would have been able to sign him for even less money than when he was drafted as the last pick. So you don't necessarily have to know who they are. Once they catch your eye, then you want to get invested. Just like once Brock Purdy started throwing the ball around and winning, we're like, oh, who is this guy? Let's learn more about him, right? So I'm using Purdy because I'm a Niners fan. He is most relevant to me. But go with whoever you can pull from, whatever industry, whatever, you know, interests you. And that is kind of what this tournament is for. It's not always about the ones who you think are going to be the best. Sometimes people surprise you. And Dame and Parker are definitely the ones in this tournament who have stood out to me for all the right reasons. And I think they're going to have good futures within NXT.
All right, folks, we went long, but it was a good show. So what are you going to do?
Our show wasn't that great of a show.
And we had our moments. I think we had some good rants. Sometimes we thought Gallus were the champions, but these things
talked
happen.
The Wire.
We did. Talking the Wire, I think, it makes any show better. Anyway, we should run for the exits here because we have covered this ad nauseum, and we have got 2 weeks of Halloween Havoc coming at you, folks. Bruce will recap it next week, and I got the week after that. So no doubt they will add a fatal nine-way 2 weeks from now. But in the meantime,
championship scramble.
Oh, gosh. You know, I love those, but I can't imagine what horror that would be to recap. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Bruce.
I'm Bruce Lee Hazel. You can find me at B_Lee253. And as Kelly said, my report will be up next week for Halloween Havoc Night 1.
Nate is at Nate Lindberg, and you can find him there. And hopefully he is awake, Nate, so he can stop this show and send it in to Wade so it can be shown to all of you. Not so much shown as listened to, because I'm in my underwear. Nobody wants that. So we will check you in 7, folks. Cheers if you hung with us this long.
Chaos. Hey,